Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 73 of Pleb Chain Radio. Today is Friday, the 9th of August, and it is 6:05 p.m. on the east coast of the United States. At the time of recording, we have a fun show ahead of you. Our guest, SourceNode, a philosopher, gentle pleb, and Nostrich, joins us to talk about all the stuff. And just a reminder, if you are listening to the recording on Apple or Spotify, first of all, thank you. But I would urge you to hit pause and switch to Fountain, where you can earn some sats while listening and support the value for value movement. We're also live on a brand new Nostr client for podcasting called Fanfares, where you can pay some sats, 100 sats in our case, and listen to our show ad-free. In a plot twist, our Fountain show is ad-free as well. And if you've joined us live, either on Nostrness and or Zap.stream, thank you for listening. And you can join in the live chat. Sometimes these things tend to get pretty lively. And for our sermon today, QW...
Avi, wait, before that, you mentioned ad-free. I'm curious. Like when you do promo codes for, let's say, Nostr for BTC Prague 2025, is that technically an ad?
Well, the way I view advertisement is if there is a third party involved. Mm-hmm. I guess with promo codes, I am the third party, aren't I? I mean, yes, it could be BTC Prague or BitBlock Boom. I think those are the two we've done.
Yeah, I mean, because is shill the same as ads?
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah. I don't know.
I think there's a little bit of a gray area with promo codes. I mean, ideally, you know, we're all going to the same place and we want to see each other. Might as well hook a brother up with a promo code, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a good question, QW. I'd never really thought about it that way. But yeah. Let's just say ad-free. It sounds a lot better.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, and so sermon, plebs buying time. Tell me a little bit about it, Avi.
Yeah, look, QW, you know, there's been a wave of, maybe a couple of waves of plebs over the last 4-5 years, maybe even more. And you can see with them that Bitcoin has allowed them to break out of the 9-to-5 fiat trap and pursue what they love. And, you know, these are folks who maybe as kids they had dreams and aspirations and passions. And then adulthood hit and some of the fiat realities that come along with adulthood, like paying for the bills, keeping the lights on, right, taking care of the family. All of those happen, and so many folks have to make that tough choice of setting aside their dreams and aspirations about how they want to spend their time. You know, and honestly, if you're, let's say most people are awake 16 hours in a day, half of that time during on weekdays, people spend doing things in most of the time what they don't like. And they do that because they have these fiat imposed obligations, because their purchasing power is being devalued and they're constantly chasing that, trying to stay ahead of that. And you've seen with some Bitcoin plebs who have the foresight early on to get into Bitcoin, that they've been able to buy themselves time. And what I mean by that is they've come to early retirement because they didn't trade it all away. They kept their Bitcoin safe, and they were able to break out of that fiat matrix. And now so many of them are pursuing their dreams, pursuing beauty, which really, to me, is the point of life. Now, for a lot of people, right, and obviously you and I are not in that boat, not yet anyway. And I honestly believe, you know, most people's entry point into that freedom, right, to pursue your dreams, is dependent on how quickly humility came to you. So what I mean by that is, you know, there's some folks who, when they first hear about Bitcoin, are incredibly skeptical about it, saying, oh, no, my understanding of economics and how these things work is rock solid. There's no way something like Bitcoin can work. And at some point, that humility sets in, and not for everyone, but for some people, and they go down the Bitcoin way, right? So the sooner that happens, the sooner they've bought themselves that freedom. And, you know, that's one approach. The others, in yours and my case, QW, is we shitcoined a lot, right? And I'll talk about myself. Basically from 2016 to some point in 2019, I was shitcoining. And if I hadn't been shitcoining and instead just been stacking sats, I would have been retired by now. So this is the price I'm paying for not being humble. That said, QW, as NGU continues, as we believe it will, and actually more than NGU, it's our purchasing power over time increasing as we stack sats. I think there will be a wave, maybe the next one, or maybe I don't know if it's going to be this one in my case, maybe the next one, where I will, I believe, be able to free myself, thus buying myself time. So let me ask you, QW, have you bought yourself any time?
I'll tell you what, I could definitely use it. Having a toddler and in this world and working my day job and you know, providing for my family along with my wife and spending any spare time you know, showing my wife affection, which they all, you know, need in life. It's tough, and really that allocation of time is the end goal for me. Having more time to spend with my son, my family, even my, you know, my parents or other people. I find that I lose friends over time because I'm so so strung, just basically tied up with responsibilities. Creativity takes a backseat. All these things that time provides. That truly, you know, rewards your heart is something that gets taken away, you know, the time theft. And for me, you know, the number go up, that's not necessarily the goal as much as it is the free time, that free time go up. So storing that time in an exponential fashion. When we look at, I saw something today where it was like, if you had your STEMI check and you put that $1,200 into Bitcoin at the time, it'd be 10,800 or whatever. To me, I look at that. That was five times more time I could have had in that space with just that $1,200. So these things can really, you know, and that was a pretty short time period. I mean, three and a half years. So you can see how this starts to exponentially add up. And that allocation of value of what you get for that that NGU, it's all subjective. So maybe you really want to. Maybe you're just a single person. You've allocated your time to where you just live somewhere that doesn't cost a lot. You've been a sat stacking machine. Good for you. You're going to have a lot more time, and then you can actually choose your life that you want. You have a lot more options. A lot more power and not being, you know, a slave to whatever the fiat realm is submitting to you. So, you know, all these things are big. And I think I also think about like Nostr, Avi, the interoperability where, you know, I built my following in MySpace. I built my following in AOL, whatever it is. And you go down the decades, you kept spending all that time rebuilding your following. If I was a business, you know, my family business, let's say they've been around for 50 years, I could continue to keep that time over the years in an Ostra environment where I'm not having to rebuild it every time. So there is a store of value in time with Nostr as well, of not the redundancy of that is completely eliminated with interoperability. But that's a kind of a different subject, but it does allocate, it does go in line with time, right?
I think it's a store of value of social capital.
Yes.
Right. And yeah, it does go hand in hand to an extent with Bitcoin. I will say one last thing, QW, about buying time. And I said pursuing beauty, right? And I strongly believe that we are all wired to pursue beauty, given the choice. By the way, that pursuit of beauty could be just telling jokes with your children or running around them in the backyard, just having a good time, right? Or just going on a date with your wife or going for a walk in the park with her or your spouse, your partner, whatever it is, right? Those are beautiful things too. Pursuit of beauty doesn't just have to mean painting or writing or composing music or whatever it is, right? It's all of those things. And, you know, we have, not yet anyway, but a lot of people have Bitcoin to thank for allowing them that opportunity to do that with the vast majority of their time.
Yeah, and we live in a world where, let's say, the weekend vibe, all that is spare time, right? you're just a completely different person when you've worked your butt off all week, and let's say you have a Saturday and Sunday off. It's alleviating, and it's something where we have a currency, our asset like Bitcoin that can provide a forever weekend, right?
Yes, that's right.
In a way, I mean, depending upon how you act and how you allocate and whatnot. But I would say I would go crazy with too much time. I am a hands-on person. I do like to get my hands dirty with projects and things. So,
but
I would find ways to spend it.
I guess the point, broader point is, you would do exactly what you wanted, right? You would get to choose that. All right.
Well, good. Well, you want to introduce our guest, Avi?
Yeah. Well, it's my pleasure to welcome someone I've met. I've been interacting with on Nostr for well over a year now, on and off. But I had the opportunity to meet at BitBlock Boom first last year, and then a couple more conferences, Madeira, Prague. And then most recently, we had a really nice chat in Nashville. Now, as you know, QW, I wasn't attending the conference, but there was a pleb party, and our guest, SourceNode, and I had a nice chat, and I thought it'd be a great idea to have him on the shows, because he is a fascinating person and love to hear what he has to say. So, SourceNode, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Avi. Thank you for the intro. Yeah, it's wild to think that I've seen you at four conferences now. That's pretty impressive, actually, for both of us.
Indeed. So there's
Avi. Let me just say, because I think I talked about it last week. You know, we talk about these conferences, and people say, "Why do you go?" You know, it's that you're just short Bitcoin, or, you know, like I said last week, Feds were there; they're just compiling the guest list or whatnot. But this is exactly the reason. You meet the source node. You meet the X Frog. You meet the Mads. You meet these people these plebs, these amazing people that are all here for the same reason. And SourceNode is just another example of that.
Yeah, it's a really good point, QW. SourceNode, there is a burning question before we get all gooey and philosophical with the conversation. Are mattresses a shitcoin?
Oh, man. So I wanted to touch on that. I'm glad you asked me, because I'm totally sleep deprived right now. The last two nights have been not ideal for my sleep schedule. I've got a yoga mat on the ground with a towel on top of it. And I cannot tell you confidently that mattresses are a shitcoin or that they're a scam yet. But I'm going to keep trying. I think there's something to it.
Is this are you taking advice from your doctor, Max DeMarco?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I posted on Noster. So I'm in the midst of a significant move at the moment. And I was like posting on Noster because I know there's a bunch of autists out there that do mad research, could save me a lot of time. Said, what do you guys think about mattresses? Tell me, like, show me your best mattress. And a bunch of people came back, like 5 or 6 people came back and said, I don't use a mattress. I sleep on the ground like a man. And I was like, are you fucking serious? And Avi posted me the video that Max made and I watched it and I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this. I'm going to try something that's going to deprive me of sleep during one of the most stressful times of my life. This is a good idea. So that's what I've been doing the last 2 days.
Love it. Yeah. I think QW commented, well, before we started the show, Source Note, he commented that it looked like you had a shower curtain. You were sleeping on a shower curtain on the floor.
It was a bath towel, Avi. That's what it looked like. I always look at something and I'm like, what if I did that? You know, I'm just got like a little pad and a bath towel sitting next to my bed, and my wife walks in like, what are you doing? And I'm like, yeah. I'm gonna sleep here. I've been watching this YouTube video. And what about like the grounding blankets? That's like a whole craze too. Let me just say, the pleb culture is hilarious to me. Like, we're always looking for that next, you know, closest to touching grass, earth thing between the carnivore diets, our diet nature, sunning our balls, whatever it may be, all the way to like grounding. I think there's even grounding shoes now. We're always down to experiment self-betterment, right?
Yeah, I literally do all of those things because of Bitcoin also. And unironically, they've all helped me.
Is that why you had to move, the sunning part?
Yeah, my neighbors, they can't put up with it anymore.
Perfect. So yeah, where do we go, Avi?
Well, it's also so for folks who might not know you, do you want to tell us a little bit about your backstory and how you got onto Noster?
Sure, yeah. So the intro was interesting because, like, you guys both talked about very critical parts of my journey, the shit coining for a little while when I didn't know what I was doing. Like in 2017, I thought I was a genius, you know, and then I got humbled very nicely by the bear market. And then I started reading books. Shitcoiners don't read. That's my pitch for anybody who's like dealing with crypto versus Bitcoin. Shitcoiners don't read. So I started reading. I changed my whole perspective on life. And I was working a corporate job. I was in sales. It was like part of the machine. It was very soul sucking. I knew I had more interesting things I wanted to research: philosophy, psychology, spirituality, theology, whatever. And I was wasting my time and energy. And luckily, Bitcoin became my exit. Gradually and then suddenly, I was able to leave my fiat job and just fuck off for like 3 years. And what I did during that 3 years was read an insane amount of books. And then I put this lecture series together, which is kind of like an audio book in itself. And in that audio series, I talked about all the things that have helped me in my process of escaping the matrix, so to speak, the fiat matrix, however you want to put it. And one of the bigger topics in the series is psychedelics, but it's not the only. I also talk about nonviolent communication and shadow work and philosophy, like Ken Wilber's philosophy. And I might be expanding on it further, but now I'm moving into the space in a way where Bitcoin is like every part of my life. I'm moving to go start a podcast with Tour Demeester, which should be happening. I mean, I'm going to be moving in a week, so we'll see how soon. Oh man, that's a good meme in the chat there. Waiting for summer so I can sun these nuts. That's good. So anyway, yeah, that's basically like my story in a nutshell, and I'm wide open.
So you are retired then?
Why I'm retired. I'm fiat retired. Yeah.
So many puns right there.
So when, obviously you didn't shitcoin that hard, right?
No, if
you
are, no.
Yeah.
No, I didn't actually lose my ass. I was like pretty well, you know, positioned. I never traded leverage. I never like took out loans or anything crazy like that. So, I always keep it pretty moderate.
What was that aha moment for you when you said, wait a minute, I've been wrong all this
time? I love this story. So, okay. I saw a post on Twitter by this guy named Crypto Yoda. And Crypto Yoda was a shitcoiner, just like I was at the time. But he was posting and he said, I know that Ripple has done like a 20x, but is this the future that you want to live in? Because it's centralized and it can be controlled. And I read his post and it was the first moment that I got a glimpse of like why Bitcoin's important and why CBDCs are so bad. And in that moment, right then, I was like, oh, Bitcoin's the only one. Like all these other shit coins are trash. Tether, I can't trust it. I wish I had at this point. You know, I would have done a lot better had I trusted it. But right at the top of the 2017 market, I just got rid of all my shit coins and went all in on Bitcoin. So that was the moment. Like I knew we were going to crash. I did not know we were going to crash 80%. That was a humbling experience, but I knew it was overbought, and I just rode the bear market. And now I've been through like 2.5 bear markets, and just, you know, bear markets build character. So here I am.
I remember Crypto Yoda from back in the day, and I remember Crypto Yoda's posts about Ripple as well. I wish I'd had the same reaction that you did, Source Node. I just kept going.
Yeah, that was mine. I mean, everybody's got their key to understanding Bitcoin. You know, that was the one that hit me first. But then when I really understood it, of course, is when I read the Bitcoin Standard.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think for a lot of people, the Bitcoin Standard, you know, you have that humbling moment, then you pick up a book. Usually it's the Bitcoin Standard. And so it begins. Let's talk about Nostr though, Source Node. So you obviously Nostr didn't exist back then. QW did some sleuthing, and I think your NPUB was created early January of 23 of last year. How did you find out about Nostr? And I guess you were presumably on X or some other platform before that.
Yeah, so I was on Twitter. I've never seen X because I deleted my account before it was called X. I heard Will, I can't pronounce his last name, Kasserin, is that right?
Kasserin.
Kasserin. Okay, yeah, I've met him. I like Will. I don't know how to say his last name, but Kasserin. Okay, so I listened to him on Preston Pish's podcast. And I think I'd already heard some rumors of Nostr, but at the time it was still pretty clunky. And when I heard that one, I was like, this is it. And I set it as a New Year's resolution for 2023 to figure out how to use Nostr. So I got on astral.ninja. It was absolute trash and I loved it because it was like, you know, it felt like a real live experiment that was happening. I had an exchange with Jack directly where I said something to him and he responded back to me. Like I was such a tiny, tiny account on Twitter. I was so bad at Twitter. I'm still bad at the Twitter format. Like I don't understand how to, I think Daniel was with Susie yesterday. I was like, oh, tell Susie I said what's up. And he's like, you just did. And I was like, oh yeah. It's like, I'm like a total boomer on Twitter. So anyway, that was my walk into Nostr. And I've loved it. I mean, it really feels like home, and I don't know what it's becoming, but I'm super bullish on it. I wrote an article about being a Nostr maximalist. Like I wanted to put my flag in the ground early because I just never really liked Twitter. I don't like the energy. It's like an emotional mosh pit. Everything's an argument all the time. It's so hectic and there's so much noise. And on Nostr, it's like basically exactly the curated version of what I had on Twitter because I was only following Bitcoin only people on Twitter. And so I transitioned to a place where there were no shitcoiners. Like nobody was bothering me, trying to shill me like whatever token. Occasionally I get XMR people and like mad respect to those who are still hanging on to the dream or whatever. But Yeah, I love Noster and I love the Zaps and I love what's being built. It feels like the future.
And you started off as completely anonymous back then, right? But it seems like now you're stepping into the public spotlight more and more, right? You've started attending conferences. You've been speaking on stage.
Yeah.
And Susie from Forbes, who you just mentioned, and just for the audience that maybe Daniel, who's from PubKey, who's in the live audience right now, posted a photo yesterday of him and Susie at PubKey yesterday. So that's what you're referring to, SourceNode. But yes, there was an article by her about Bitcoin and psychedelics that had you, friend of the show, Tom Tabor, and a few others quoted in it. So you obviously started off completely anonymous and now you're stepping out more and more. Is that deliberate or is that just something that's happening organically?
It's very deliberate because this has not been an easy process for me. As Eric Stacks put it, oh, there's the pick. Nice. As Eric Stacks put it, every instinct in my life has been the opposite of this, like make myself as low key as possible. Don't draw attention to myself, but that seems like such a cop-out. I mean, we're living at the most exciting time in history and I've got stuff to say about it. And like, I want to be part of it. And, so yeah, I am coming out. Like my full name is in that article that Susie posted and, my face is going to be on YouTube. It is on YouTube already. And there will be more. Like, I think there's 4 podcasts recorded already that'll be out. So yeah, I'm out. I'm like out of the closet, out of the anon closet.
Let me ask you, how much of Noster do you credit that to? Maybe just the community or conversations, creativity?
You know, that's a good question. I hadn't really thought about it, but I didn't feel really safe on Twitter. Like I was so scared to go to a conference because the interactions I'd had on Twitter were so fucking toxic. And I mean, like it was a very important website for me. I'm not bashing it for no reason. Like I learned what I needed to learn there, but I was so worried to go to a conference because the people I'd interacted with were such dicks. You know, maybe I would say 30%, 40% of the time, right, which was a lot. And those people, either they are nicer at conferences or they don't go. So everybody I've met at conferences has been super nice, you know? Mm-hmm. And so as I've started going to conferences, that's been more of the opening feeling of like, oh, you know, I can literally talk to all these people that I've been listening to on podcasts for years. They're right here and they're super chill. And it's not a big deal. Noster probably encouraged me to go to conferences, and then the conferences encouraged me to get more active in the space. Right. So that's kind of the way I'd put it.
That was my whole story, is basically the encouragement of the community. X was it, or Twitter was a totally different world. I mean, it was an abyss for me, at least. I never had any connection. Once we came here, it was that chronological chat and just being able to shoot the shit. It really inspired me to, like, you know, there's more of me out there. I just felt like maybe it was just a psyop. Maybe there wasn't that many people out there, like-minded plebs. And you start to realize, you know, at least my friend group that really connected with early, we're all kind of in the same age group. I mean, there's reasons you'd gravitate because you're so alike is you have these connections and communications that never would have existed via, let's say, Twitter.
Right. Yeah. I think that every Bitcoiner kind of goes through this, this period of isolation where they think they're the only one that understands it. And like everybody around them is totally asleep. And then you finally go to a meetup or a conference or you get on Noster and you're like, oh, wow. Okay. I'm not crazy. Like I'm not totally alone in this. There are other people who understand it and they're also not crazy. You know, it's very, very, it's an affirmation, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's a few, I mean, I know Open Mike in the audience right now, he's an exceptional story as well of kind of how the community empowered him to come out of, break out of his bunker, you know, start Toonster, start being the face of change in his local community. Going all the way to live events and in these conferences.
He's the face of Value for Value, KW, at this point.
Oh, boy.
You know, Sosnod, it is interesting what you said about conferences. My first conference was BitCon Miami 2022, because I was the shitcon until 2019. By the time I realized and got my head in the right place, COVID happened. And I'm in New York, so it's 2 years of lockdown, basically. And I was scared to come out, honestly, not because of the virus, but because of how toxic the world had become divided, right? The world had become because of the pandemic. I just didn't want to be part of that. And then finally came out in 2022. I think it was May. Went down to Miami, and it was just such an incredible experience being around, like you said, right? Up until that point, I thought I was alone. And then I was around 20,000 people. And in the symbolism, or the metaphor is also powerful here for me, because I felt literally like I was taking my mask off, right? Where you have, I walk around in fiat world wearing a mask. And then, of course, there was the New York and the pandemic. You had to wear a literal mask walking around everywhere. And then just being in Miami around Bitcoiners, I was able to take the mask off both literally and metaphorically. So really powerful experience. And then, you know, went to several others since. And then the first thing that I noticed about Nostra, you know, using Astral Ninja and all of that you talked about, is this feels like a Bitcoin conference. The talking to people here just feels exactly like a Bitcoin conference. And it's been great. And I agree with and echo everything you said. So, Sosnod, you mentioned a couple of things, right? Some of the things you're working on or writing. Nonviolent communication, is that what you said? And shadow work? Could you talk a little bit about each of those?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they sort of need to go together, and they often don't, in my opinion. But nonviolent communication at its core is like a different philosophy about life. I've been trying to completely eradicate the use of the word should and have to from my life. There is no have to. There's only choices, right? If you want to expand your free will, then you want to look at why you're choosing to do the things you're choosing. Maybe you don't enjoy all of them, but you're doing them for a reason, right? And I hear people all the time, it's a very sort of subtle way that we enslave ourselves by saying, I have to do this, I have to do that. But we don't have to. We're choosing to do these things. There are other options. There's always another option. And so that's kind of the core of NBC to me. But there's different ways to look at it. Ultimately, NBC, a short for nonviolent communication. And it can be a little pedantic at times. Like I've been in NBC circles, and they're very postmodernist, and they can be kind of like obnoxious hippies. I can be that way too, I'm sure. But the core is really to like get past the bickering, sort of one-upmanship, sort of trying to like have these gotcha lines that's like, I'm right and you're wrong, you know, I gotcha. A lot of people get into arguments along those lines, and they completely miss the point of what the other person actually cares about. And NBC is a tool that's used to try to get more to the heart of the issue. And when used properly and with good intent, it can resolve conflict in a really meaningful and lasting way. And I've seen that happen in my own life. I've also seen it applied to war zone conflicts and hostage negotiations and all kinds of things. So that's something that I think I would really like to bring to the Bitcoin community specifically, to talk more about that philosophy. Because for a bunch of people who are all about freedom, Bitcoiners love to tell other Bitcoiners what to do. Like, they're always telling each other how to spend their Bitcoin, how not to spend their Bitcoin, like what to eat, what not to eat. It's it's all a choice, you know, and I'm in favor of people using their free will and their free choice. And I don't have any desire to enforce my opinion on anyone else, you know, and that's really the core of NBC.
Is it as simple though, SourceNode, as using different words? Like you mentioned words like should and words like have to, right? Sometimes people just use these things reflexively, right? Without necessarily having any intent or any sort of profound intent behind those words, right? It's just force of habit. Is it as simple as just changing the words, or does it need to be more intentional?
I think it does need to be more intentional, but the words used unconsciously do have an impact as well. So when I catch myself saying have to or should or need to, I will catch myself and I'll say, you know what? No, this is a conscious choice I'm making. But of course, that's just another mindfulness practice. Like there's many of them. I'm enjoying the chat also, by the way.
The live chat. Back.
Yeah, the live chat's going.
But the potential of Noster Nest 2.0 can be a little distracting at times.
Is that? Right. I don't know how much of this is going to be displayed for anybody who's viewing later. So maybe I should stop commenting on it. But
anyway. Chat is ephemeral, SourceNode.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you just got to be here live to experience it, you know?
This is the way.
This is the way.
You got to be there, you know? Make the conscious choice, right?
Right. Yeah. You also asked me about shadow work. I could get into that.
But let's talk about the words themselves. I think we were talking about. Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So I believe that language is a very misunderstood and powerful tool that we live inside of, similar to the dollar system, right? Like you live inside of the dollar system, but you never really stop to think about what it's doing to shape your world. Language is the same thing. And different languages have different impacts on people's psychology. And when you use certain words, not only do the words have different meanings in different cultures, but the physical resonance of the words have a different expression. Words are kind of like magic spells in a way. Like every time you say a word, you're expressing something. It could be positive, neutral, or negative. And I like to try, I do my best, I would say, to portray positivity or neutral as much as possible.
Yeah. And I like, for instance, I always tell my partner, my wife, you know, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. A lot of that comes down to like when she wants to send something back or she's not happy about something about her food. I always try to tell her to put a little window dressing on it. You know, hey, I come here often. I love what you guys do. You're wonderful. But kind of mindset where, you know, you're taking control of the outcome through the words and thinking through them in a positive way.
Yeah. And some of it's cultural, right? Like if you're in the United States and you go to New York, like the people are much more direct. If you go to the South, they beat around the bush, maybe to a fault almost. There's some kind of a balance to be had. But if you use NBC, I think you can be completely direct, completely authentic, and also speak to the heart of the issue. But another core part of NBC is that nobody's responsible for your feelings, and you're not responsible for anybody else's feelings. And that is such a Bitcoin thing, in my opinion. Like that's such a libertarian thing. It's like, I'm going to say this thing and you're going to hear it. And then you're going to make an interpretation of that thing. And then you're going to have feelings about it. But you can't say what you said hurt my feelings, because it's just not true. There's like there's a middle piece, which is that interpretation. And I really like to sort of own that. And also realize that if I'm a little bit more careful about what I say, I can probably minimize the negative interpretations, you know?
There was a meme that I saw. this is good, this is, so I do this thing.
Here we go.
on occasion source node
where I a meme. Yeah.
Describe a meme. This is going to be a tough one.
1,000 words.
Well, okay. So it's a two-frame meme or three-frame meme, right? Where there's an NPC on the left and there's the Chad on the right, right?
Yeah.
And then the middle frame is when the Chad moves close. The first frame is NPC says something. Then the second frame is when the Chad moves closer to the NPC.
Yeah.
And then the third frame is when the Chad actually says something and you see the NPC's expression change.
Right. I know the meme. Yeah.
Okay. You know the meme. Okay. I think I did a reasonable job of explaining this one. Okay. So it's the first frame, the Chad says, "Did I offend you last year?" And the NPC says yes. Second frame, Chad moves closer to NPC. And then third frame, Chad says, "Work on yourself so that I don't offend you this year."
Boom.
Gordon DeLorean, can we, he's in the audience. Can we get that meme up pretty quickly?
I want to shout out to Gordon DeLorean because you post the best memes, dude. Like, you've got the best memes on Noster, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Original memes, yeah.
I have to ask, as you're working on yourself, because you're talking about yourself, is there other people in your life that you know? Because one of the biggest things for me, obviously, is as I'm looking to change or I'm thinking about change, there's a lot of stationary things in my life. Whether it's my son, who I need to be focused on the most, my wife, or our family, whatever it is. It's almost like dieting by yourself type of thing. It's really kind of tough to do if you're not doing it together. Have you had any issues with that?
Absolutely. Oh man, yeah, you're speaking right to me because I'm like the only one that gives a shit about NBC in my entire life, and so like when I'm hearing people blaming each other and saying I have to do this, I have to do that, and they're like begrudgingly doing all these things that they hate. And I'm just watching them enslave themselves through my perspective. And I just have to, okay, there we go. I just did it. I don't have to, I choose to allow them to do that. You know, I try to love them anyway. And like, the hard part, I guess, is holding space for myself when I'm pissed off and nobody's talking to me the way I want to, but, it's okay. I went through similar to Bitcoiners, you know, when Bitcoiners go down the rabbit hole, they become obnoxious for like a good 18 months. And I did the same thing with NBC. It's, I would say, equivalently deep rabbit hole. And, so I was really annoying with it for a while. I was like constantly correcting my friends and, you know, telling them they could be doing things differently. And like the NBC fixes this and all that shit. And then eventually I got burnt out on it and I completely walked away from it, and eventually I'll make my way back, but I'm certainly not an expert by any means.
Now, imposing NVC on people is sort of paradoxical in a sense, isn't it?
Yes. Same with Bitcoin.
You know, you'd mentioned something as you were setting the stage for this. So it's not about how certain Bitcoiners also start, especially the one-upmanship, which you mentioned, right? And the way I've viewed this is, in the fiat world, which is a completely zero-sum game, I mean, one-upmanship is the natural state of that, right? It's because you need to win. You can't let anyone else win, because someone else winning means you lose. Right, so that's where that one-upmanship comes in. I would think that with Bitcoin, which is a positive sum game, right? It's if someone contributes and wins, right, they are adding something to the network, so that rising tide should lift you up. It is interesting that that still exists in Bitcoin culture. Why do you think that is?
I think there's a couple layers. The first one is that like people are still recovering from the trauma of being in that world of like fiat debt and slavery and oppression. Well, oppression is maybe a heavy word, but like usury and deception, and everybody's out to get each other, and it's very tough. But I would say that like it has improved a lot in the time I've been in the Bitcoin space, and it's improved a lot on Noster. I mean, I can't tell you how often I get into it with somebody on Noster about something trivial, and then one of us is just like, "Oh, actually, dude, you're right. You know, and they just, it's never happened on Twitter, I don't think. I've never had an argument end with somebody else being like, you know what? Yeah, you got me. You know, you are more correct than I am in this situation, and I'm going to adopt your view. And I really love that on Noster. And so I think there is a sort of a healing going on without the algorithm and with like a more tight knit group of people.
To that point, you don't really see, and I haven't seen, and I feel like this is a thing on Twitter or X, is when someone blocks you, you like screenshot it and you make it a whole thing, like it's the coolest thing, you've been blocked.
Yeah,
it's like, it seems so just childish. I don't know, but I've never seen that on Noster. It's just, you just mute and move on if that's your game.
Yeah, you don't know if somebody mutes you on Noster. You just don't hear from them anymore.
Well, you can find out, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Cornelorian knows everyone. Okay, well.
Cornelorian has a list of mutes.
I've muted a handful of people. It's mostly just people that are, like, personally attacking for no reason. I'm just like, all right, yeah. I don't. You might be right about something, but I don't really need that energy coming my way. But I did, just in a childish way, repost Craig blocking me, and I was proud of it.
Yeah, so you got the badge, I suppose.
Thanks, Yoshi. Yeah, that was like the only block I ever really like noticed or cared about, but got him.
So let's talk about Shadow Book.
Yes. Yeah, so you mentioned it earlier, actually. That meme is a perfect representation, the meme you described, because basically Shadow Work, as I understand it, right, it's like another endless rabbit hole, but when something irritates you, like when something triggers you, activates your fight or flight, which used to happen to me on a fucking daily basis when I was on Twitter with something, it's something inside of myself that's not resolved or integrated. And so it's my responsibility, if I want to take it on, to look at that thing and understand why it's irritating me, and then transmute that into something more positive, right? So piece by piece, every time I get irritated, I really dig down into it, because my buddy told me, he's like, okay, every time you get pissed off or upset, it's an opportunity to heal. It's like, oh, what's this thing that's being called to your attention to look at so that you can let it go, you know? And at this point, I don't know, I don't get mad that much anymore, which is a huge shift from who I was like 5 years ago. I was a very upset person, and I was like angry in traffic, angry at work, angry at school, angry all the time. And now I'm like mostly not, you know, which is a huge improvement. Like my physical health has improved as a result of the decrease of stress. But I did make an episode about shadow work on the series, the Holotropic Renaissance series, that like describes it in better detail. It's probably my favorite episode on the series.
You know, Sazan, if you share that series with us, we can put it in the show notes.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'll send it to you.
On that topic, any other, you know, I know shitcoiners don't read, but I'm sure some of our listeners do. So if you have any other notes, I'm happy to put them in the, or links, I'd happy to put them in the show notes.
Yeah, so sourcenode.xyz is my landing page. If you get past the entry test, which is quite simple, most Bitcoiners will get it. then my articles, I've written 8 articles for Bitcoin Magazine that I don't think have gotten much traction, but some of them are good. And then the lecture series is linked there as well in my NPub. So sourcenode.xyz.
Cool. Yeah, we will put them up there. But let's go back to shadow work.
Sure.
Again, so the theory is that if in an interaction with another human being, you feel it gives rise to, let's say that interaction gives rise to some negative feelings, right? Whether it's anger or irritation or whatever it is, the theory is that it's something unresolved within you, as opposed to something that the other person is doing to you. Is that right?
Yeah, that's my baseline assumption when I get into a conflict with somebody, is that I default to what could I have done differently? How could I handle this differently? And it might not be to change my behavior. It might just be to like not interact with that person, but at least until I resolve the thing. But the thing is that if there's not something bothering you, then that interaction wouldn't affect you. In fact, it probably wouldn't even happen. Like it wouldn't gravitate towards you. I truly believe everything happens for a reason. I truly believe the universe is like orienting itself to your benefit in every moment, even though it doesn't feel like it a lot of times. It feels like everything's ganging up against you, but it's the dialectic like pushing to awaken you, in my view. So that's my default assumption in every moment.
The classic life is happening for you, not to you, right?
Exactly.
So I like that, right? I like to believe that. I like to live my life that way. But if you were to put a logical, right, or a scientific veneer to why that happens, what would that be? Like because otherwise you could have people say, well, that sounds like some new age hokum right there, life happening to you, universe is taking care of me, right? So if you, how would you go about putting some kind of scientific or logical framework to something like that?
So I mean it really is a matter of faith for me. It is a spiritual experience, and so it's a little bit hard to back into it rationally, but I can try. So I can at least show that in my personal experience, although it's anecdotal, I can show in my own personal experience of the world that when I go through this process of integration, I don't get triggered as much. My life gets a lot easier. I have less conflict in my life, even though it seems like the world is more or less falling apart at the moment. My life continues to move in a positive trajectory. So, I mean, that's not really scientific, but it's material to me. Ultimately though, it all comes back to faith in my opinion. And I know that there are a lot of like very rational, materialistic minded people that don't want, when I say materialistic, I don't mean shallow. I mean, from the philosophical sense. Like they don't believe in anything beyond the material. And I don't know. I mean, it's hard to bridge that gap. I think that's ultimately like the seed of faith, is that in order to experience faith, you have to have faith. Like you can't just, you can't explain it. Although the book that I usually reference when I am trying to explain it rationally is A Confession by Tolstoy, because he takes a very rational walk through his life right into spirituality. And I love that book for that reason. But again, that's actually shadow work, right? So if you hear the word faith, or you hear God or Christ, and you move, or universe, or whatever the word that triggers you, you know, then that's the thing to look at. If you want.
Yeah. I don't know. I put you on the spot there by asking you to give a rational framework for it. I probably wouldn't be able to, and these are methodologies, or maybe related methodologies I try and utilize to live a better life. Right. It's like, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy But when you believe this, then it just changes your state of mind. You believe that everything's happening for you. And so your demeanor changes. You treat others better, and then they treat you better. And then it's just sort of that, it's almost like a flywheel, right? That keeps accelerating.
Yeah, that's a good rational explanation. I mean, it can be utilitarian, right? It's like, well, what I have been doing is not working very well for me, so I'm going to try something different and see if it works. You try that thing and it changes your life, and then you're like, oh, okay, cool, it works, you know.
Yeah, it's the life is a mirror mentality. Where you know, what you see is a reflection of your perception,
right?
So how do you work on that perception, you know? And maybe it is the linguistics of it, maybe it's you know, maybe you sleep on a bed on the floor, and you're grounded. Maybe you sun yourself. There's a number of different things, but I think ultimately it's just self-betterment and trying to adjust what you can certainly instantly change about yourself.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people get really caught up in making a radical change to their entire lives at once. But in this exact moment right now, there's only certain things that are available to you. And so that's usually what I try to ground myself in, is like, what can I actually change right now in this moment? And usually it's not very much, you know, so it makes things simpler.
Yeah, if you think about a sailing a ship, if you're 1 degree off over 2,000 miles, that's, you end up in a far different destination I guess that would be an analogy that failed for me, but you know what I mean.
No, that's a good analogy. I get it.
Christopher Columbus would like to have a word.
Yeah, Magellan's on the line. Yeah. I guess, universe and mentality, where did your journey with psychedelics begin?
My journey with psychedelics probably properly started with me as a child spinning around in circles in the backyard and noticing that altered my consciousness and that I kind of enjoyed it. And, then later, tried marijuana, and that altered my consciousness. And I found that interesting. And it also showed me that, like, the authority figures in my life had been lying to me, because that was not a big deal at all. Not nearly what they told me in DARE. And then the next
Reefer Madness comes to mind.
I didn't see Reefer Madness. DARE had a different deal.
Yeah. And,
if they had just been a little bit more honest, I think it would be really effective, actually, because, like, I would be happy to talk to, like, a 10-year-old about why smoking pot can be bad, right? It's not cool. But when the cops are all, like, really lame and they say that it's not good, then it makes it cool. So, I mean, they showed up in, like, the DARE PT Cruiser at my elementary school. It was ridiculous.
And hard sell of it's a gateway drug. I mean, for which, you, it was obviously spinning in the grass was your gateway drug. But
sure. I mean, I think all humans to some degree or another crave altered states of consciousness. We just have different ways of getting there.
Right.
And to different degrees, you know.
And like you said, I mean, if you would have just explained it a little better, you know, I feel like the gateway drug might be just the skepticism that you get after you've tried it. You're like, wait a second, this isn't what they told me, type of mentality. And then maybe you're a little bit more prone to try the next thing because you at this point you're not getting the right information.
Yeah, that's right. I was pretty rational about it. I decided the next drug I was going to do was mushrooms because it was natural and, you know, it didn't have chemicals involved in it. So I tried mushrooms when I was like 16 and I absolutely did not know what I was getting into. I had no guidance. We asked this kid named Mikey to babysit us, and like Mikey'd never done mushrooms and he was like borderline retarded. So it was a weird day, but it was ultimately perfect. Like everything is in every moment. And the mistakes and sort of like stumbling blocks and speed bumps I've hit along the way, I learned a lot. And so I like incorporated that all in the series that I put together to kind of speed run it for people.
And what is it about that altered state of consciousness that you've been chasing on? Well, I don't know if you'd agree with the word chasing, so it's not, but or you've been seeking, let's just say, what is it about those states of consciousness that have changed your worldview, if at all?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. But I'll start with the first bit, which is like, what are we after with altered states? So I was tempted to just say reality sucks, but it doesn't. It's just that, like, I think the reality we live in today sucks, and so we sort of need something to cope with it. A lot of people use alcohol, cigarettes, ketamine, like what have you, different ways of like sort of getting out of the day-to-day monotonous suffering that we all experience, right? I mean, Buddha said, like, the first noble truth is, like, we all suffer. Christ, like, we all have our cross to bear. And that suffering, I think, is inherently baked into being separate, like being in this 3D reality. We're separate from the whole, and it sucks, actually. So there's like this desire to reunite with wholeness, and I think there's also this desire to escape negative feelings, right? I mean, that's the drive that causes people to accumulate capital. That's the drive that causes people to make inventions and to travel, and all this stuff is like, there's a more desirable state of affairs besides this one, and let's see if I can find it. And unfortunately, due to the way things are working today, one of the most popular and most frequent, at least in the United States, is opiates, because people are like in this very sort of desolate, hopeless reality, where doing opiates is like their only, the only taste they've ever had in their entire life of what it feels like to not be suffering, you know, and to an immense degree. And so, yeah, I think it's all of those things. But once you get to a sort of baseline of like, okay, I'm not really suffering anymore. I'm more in like a neutral place. I'm more in like a curious place. Then you can start to expand into like the exploration of your inner world and into like the depths of what it is to be a human being on planet Earth and like why we're here and like all of those big questions. And that's been more expansive for me over the last few years. But in doing that, I really could not be part of like the normal reality of fiat world. I had to leave my corporate job in order to like really dive in deep on that. And I can't go back. I'm like way beyond normal, quote unquote normal at this point.
Do you know Yoni Applebug?
Yeah, we're buddies. Met him in Madeira briefly, and then we had a nice chat in Prague, and then we've been chatting since. He's a good dude.
No, he's great. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine as well. So for those who don't know, Yoni Applebug is a Swedish doctor who's a Bitcoiner, and he's been writing a lot about psychedelics and spirituality and consciousness and what have you. Well, I don't know if he writes about spirituality, come to think of it. It was more about consciousness and psychedelics. But I've heard him say that Bitcoin is a psychedelic. It behaves, it transforms many humans the way psychedelics do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that Bitcoin is psychoactive. If it wasn't, we would not be having this conversation. Like it's steered my entire life in a different direction through my psychology. Like it acts on everybody through their psychology. So it's a machine, and it's like a symbiotic organism with humanity at the same time.
Indeed. So let's come back to Terra Firma for a bit as we wind this down, Source Node.
Sure.
Come back to the materialistic in this case, right? As you'd say.
Can I ask a question, Avi?
Yeah, go ahead.
When it comes to psychedelics, let's say like mushrooms, taking at the right dosage for you.
QW's not ready to come back down.
maybe it's something. I mean, because obviously broken money leads to high anxiety in the world, and we're all looking for that escape. You know, mushrooms in general, that's something that is a little dear to me, as far as, you know, you can take a proper dose and, you know, it's not the, you know, quote unquote psychedelic. It's more of a very underglow or a just alleviation or a thinking clearly type of thing. To me, you know, you think about psychedelics and someone will say, oh, it's a drug, and then they'll go into sobriety and all those things. But in a way, with the proper dose and the proper application, it's almost sobriety. It's surreal in that sense.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad
your mind is very sober in the way you're seeing the world and feeling the world.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because I'd like to clarify that I don't see psychedelics as an escape necessarily, because the experience of a psychedelic trip can be positive or negative. It's not like taking an upper or a downer where you know reliably what it's going to do for you. It often will plunge you deeper into reality. So it's not so much an escape as it is like a raising of your consciousness, as you mentioned. Like you feel hyper sober almost, so aware of your surroundings that it can be overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just, there's a lot of, everyone's interpretations, you know, in my experience, I've seen a lot of benefits, and just at the right application, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
I would never condone anybody just go run to Thanksgiving and eat a bag of mushrooms or something.
No, that's exactly why I made the series actually, because I wanted to create a tool that I would have liked to have when I was younger.
Yeah. Well, I had a pretty similar experience growing up from weed, and I stuck with the herbal side of things, the herbal essence. So
good.
Mine was mushrooms in the woods. That was always the
nice
the camping trip, but it was a very closed off session, and just friends, and everybody was having a good time in the safety of the middle of the woods.
Right. Yeah. Feel that.
Well, carry on, Avi. Sorry.
No, I do want to add to this. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't have to be an escape, and it's not an escape, because sometimes you have to confront demons. Now, I don't do psychedelics or any drugs for that matter, but there was a time when I had a really bad trip, and interestingly enough, to people who catch this, it happened when I was 24, and that was the last time I tried anything. But it was the most
24, huh, Avi?
Yeah.
Like your book,
which is, by the way, a very long time ago. It was a horrifying ego death experience, and I had to confront some pretty bad demons, and demons that I have no interest in ever revisiting.
Yeah. Yeah, that I think that the two errors that often come up, which is very understandable. I mean, it's like there's no information, there's no guidance because it's a black market experience. You know, it's like we have to be secretive about it. But the two issues that come up are often the context and the dosage. And that sounds like you were given too much, and I'm sorry that you had such a negative experience.
Yeah, I mean, and back then, this is New York in the mid 2000s, so yeah, not much regulation or standardization back then. So no, I do want to bring this back to earth. So as I was saying. So let's talk about Nostra. So you're someone who's obviously been, you've had a ground floor view of the post Jack Dorsey wave, or the Jackening, as we like to call it.
The Jackening.
So let me ask you this: where do you see Nostra in the next year? Where do you see it 5 years from now, and where do you see it 10 years from now?
Wow. So it's so hard for me to actually see out that far at this point, but
let's have some fun. Come on, man.
Yeah. Okay. So my hope, here's my hope. Open source tech is going to integrate open source AI in a way where we can accelerate the development of open source software faster than enterprise can. We're going to have more features, more interesting activities, more interesting content, and it's just going to be a better user experience. I think that's ultimately what it's going to take, is a better user experience than enterprise for Nostra to really take off. And when is that going to happen? I don't know. I mean, it still hasn't happened with Bitcoin, so it's like, let's see. But as the NGU happens, I think that we'll have more money for development. We'll have more people leaving their fiat jobs who want to help out. We'll have more shitcoiners capitulating on their scam projects. And all of those coders, I think, are ultimately going to end up in the Nostr slash open source space. I'd like to attract like all the hackers, all the whistleblowers, all the controversial comedians, like all the people that have found the prevailing panopticon obnoxious can come to Nostr and have a good time and just hang out and like not worry about any of that stuff. So I think that at some point in the future, Nostr is going to be like the place to get the scoop. I also think there's probably going to be a big backlash from the media that's just going to call all Nostr users Nazis, and like that's going to happen too. But at that point, I think that we've already reached a point where when the mass media says something, there's a ton of people that just do the exact opposite of whatever they said, you know? And so if they start bashing Nostr, we're going to get a bunch of really cool people joining all at once. And I think that that group of people is accelerating in its size and its connectedness through podcasting and through different chat groups and whatever. So then in a more broad sense, I mean, this is my hope, and I'm not technical enough to say this, so who knows? Who knows what it'll be? But Nostr, I hope, could be like a second iteration of the internet that becomes an alternative to what we're currently using through TCP/IP and all the DNS process where you have to ask everybody permission to host a website. This feels way more organic to me as like how the internet could be, should be, in my view. So
you said should.
I said should. That's my, so that's a value assessment, my own value assessment. It absolutely should be more open and free in my value system.
And I was just getting there. So yeah, like, no, I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. All value is subjective. So that's my value.
Well, yeah, look, I mean, there is an opportunity here to re-architect the entire application layer of the internet on top of Nostr. And it's super exciting to have a front row seat to that as we do at this stage. But let me ask you, you were talking about NGU potentially bringing more developers in. I think one of the challenges in Nostr today is, well, I mean, it's basically Jack Dorsey's money at this point, right? Yeah, piped through HRF and OpenSats for the most part, right? Do you think with NGU, maybe someone, right now it's Jack Dorsey who can do it, but maybe someone who, if we get a 10x NGU, someone who's 1/10 of a Jack Dorsey would be able to step up and do what he's doing, and then 100x NGU, you know, someone who's at this point couldn't even contemplate something like that will be in a position. And so do you see Pleb stepping up and becoming and funding Nostr development?
Yeah, I think from an economic side, there's three angles, right? Like you could have another sleeper billionaire that wants to help Nostr. That's one option. The other one is that we could continue to develop this bounty system so that other developers get drawn in just because of the attraction of the capital, right? And then the third one, of course, is like plebs that are sleeper cells right now in their corporate jobs that are just waiting for NGU so that they can quit and do something they're passionate about. And there's so many of those people, you know. I mean, I hear them on Nostr all the time, up going off to the fiat mines, like, here we go again, back into the shit. And they would love to just do other stuff, but they're not liberated enough to do that yet. Yeah. And I think that a 10x.
I'm one of them.
Avi, I was going to say, is he speaking to you?
Yeah, he's talking straight into my soul.
I know Avi's number.
Every Bitcoin, way, I
won't say it.
That was my life, basically. Although, personally, I didn't have any like technical skills to provide to the network. So I didn't know what the hell to do for a couple of years. I just did what I was passionate about. And that, I believe, is the seed of another renaissance, is like a bunch of people being liberated to do exactly what they're passionate about and nothing else. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to do that. I want that for everybody.
Couldn't agree more, SourceNode. So speaking about the things you're working on, the things you're passionate about, you talked about the podcast that you're about to begin, this lecture series or this series of essays. What else do you have in the pipeline?
I'm going to start a podcast or work on a podcast with Tor Demeester called Be Real. Should be coming out. I don't know exactly when. I'm going to go meet with him next week. So we'll see. It's all very like early stages for that at the moment. But that's the next project on the docket.
What is that going to be about?
Well, it's going to be just us talking. Well, I don't know even if I'm going to be on camera. I don't know what his plans are. It's his podcast. I'm just going to help him do it. But he's got a long list of people he wants to interview and chat with. And it's going to be probably a full range from like psychology to economics to history to current events. I mean, we'll talk about all kinds of stuff on there, I'm sure. But he's got some good connections and he's been in the space for a long time. And he's obviously understood Bitcoin for a very long time. So I'm looking forward to working with him.
Looking forward to that. What, anything else?
No, just like basically simplifying my life as much as possible, getting my health in order and like trying to make a positive impact in the world. That's it.
Well, you certainly simplified your sleep.
yeah. I'm not quite at hay bales yet, but like I can dream.
I told Avi, you know, if you want, I saw a picture, I think, of the El Salvador and in the Salvadorian prison cells, and I think they just sleep on just metal flat beds. Rocks. Essentially,
yeah, that's going to backfire. They're going to be so strong, and they're going to come out of there like.
That's what I'm wondering if it's fixing soldiers. Backs or not.
Shit, they better get them some mattresses in that in the prison.
They seem like they're grounded too. You know, it might be touching some earth there, but. Yeah, that's a tragic, but that's I kind of thought of that. It's like, well, I mean, there's plenty of samples we can go off of. That's truly the remarkable change that happens in your life. But, yeah, we'll be looking forward to that. That's something we can look forward to. Is you're still working on your journey with that sleeping on the floor?
Gosh, to be honest, I might give it a break tonight because I'm so. I've been so active today doing all kinds of crazy stuff and like I'm exhausted. So I might sleep on the regular bed tonight.
Relapse.
We'll see. Yeah. You know, I got four hours on the yoga mat last night. So that was a good step in that direction.
Well, I love it. Anything else, Avi?
No, that's it, man. It's also really appreciate you taking the time. It was a fun conversation. It kind of went the way I thought it would. Which is all over the place, which is great.
Yeah. Well, you really enjoyed it too. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And anybody listening, always support value for value. Please listen on Fountain. Give us a boost, comment, whatever it may be, interact. The Nostr Native Fountain is launching soon. We couldn't be more excited for that. Just going to give us all more of a community outreach and more community fun. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.